Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels. And our guest this episode, we've got professional walleye tournament angler Max Wilson back on the show. We're going to get a fishing update, a life update, really, starting from last fall at the end of last season. We haven't talked to Max in a while, so we talk a little bit about his international fishing, which I think is very interesting. And then we get caught up on this season where Max had a great tournament early on in the year on Lake Erie. We do a little bit of a deep dive on that. And then more recently finished a top five in an MWC on Lake Oahe. And we do a little bit of a dive into that. And just always all kinds of entertaining and quality fishing stories going on with Max. And we always appreciate any opportunity that we can have Max Wilson on the show and get caught up with him. So here it is, Max Wilson. Let's get to it. The fishing opportunities in Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region are phenomenal. You've heard us talk about it on the JMO Podcast before. It's a multi-species destination. We're not just talking walleyes or perch in the wintertime. This is there's phenomenal pan fishing. There's fantastic bass fishing. There's muskies and big northern pike. Everything's there with hundreds of lakes and a bunch of communities that offer all kinds of fun events and lodging. If you want to plan your next fishing adventure, consider Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region. Head to sdglaciallakes.com for all that great information. The link is in the description to this podcast. If you have any fishing memory or a fish that you would like to commemorate with a replica, or you have questions about getting fish replicas done, reach out to Jamie Rizavi from Rizavi Taxidermy Studio in New Rockford, North Dakota. Jamie and his crew do next level work here at the JMO headquarters. We are blessed to have so many replicas made by Jamie. Reach out. You can find him on social media or online at RizaviTaxidermyStudio.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. Summit Fishing Equipment brings technology and innovation together to improve fishing equipment design and usability. Their forward-facing sonar shuttle transducer pole combos are designed to be used year-round. With just a few accessories you'll find on the website, you can mount the shuttle and transducer pole right in your boat, making the transition from ice season to open water incredibly simple and cost-effective. Check out everything they've got at summitfishingequipment.com. Use code SUMMIT10 at checkout for 10% off all orders online. That link is in the description of this podcast. You know, seeing you on social media, watching the first couple episodes of Tour Level Gold come out, so it's like, you're out there, man, but I haven't podcasted with you for all that. So get me up to speed and give me a little life update, man. Where does this year begin? Get us going here, man.
Oh, man. I feel like I've lived like 17 lives since the last time I talked to you. It's crazy. I've aged a lot in the last year. Last year, you know, it was an okay year. You know, like I keep saying, last year was about surviving rather than thriving. You know, I was in a really dark place mentally most of the year. And, you know, it took every ounce of willpower for me to pull myself out. And there was a lot of days I didn't think I was going to be able to. I mean, it's tough to talk about, but it's something that I've opened up about. You know, all the drama and BS that I had surrounding my life, both on and off the water, really started to get to me, you know. And, you could kind of see that in my tournament finishes last year. I didn't have the best year. You know, I had a good year, but not a great year. Really where it all started to turn around was when I went over to Ireland for the World Championships. You know, I'm the team captain of the USA open water fishing team. And, it's basically the Olympics of fishing, governed by the IOC. It's predator fishing. So it's not, you know, over here, I just walleye fish, but over there it's, you know, both perch, pike and zander, if they have it. And every year, you know, we've gone over there, we've only gone over for a few days to pre-fish. And you can see how that's worked out in the tournament finishes for us. It's really bothering me, especially when you're fishing under your country's flag. I hate being at the bottom of the leaderboard. So I made a promise last year that I was going to devote everything I had into, you know, doing it the right way. And so I went over there with, a good friend of mine, Jeremy, and his wife. We went over almost a month early hooked up with a guy, actually a former professional soccer player who just loves fishing. You know, it's a friend of a friend deal, and he fishes every single day, rain or shine, does not matter. The guy is hands down like more of a savage when it comes to fishing than me.
Are you just getting like connected on social media, or like kind of doing a lot of this legwork on your own, or are there some connections here that you were, you know, leveraging to get over there? Like, I'm so curious about like how you even made it happen.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of it was a friend of a friend, you know, through fishing, you know, there a guy that the team had met, you know, and that I had met over the years, you know, competing in the world championships on Team Ireland, his name's Simon, a real good friend of mine. It was actually a friend of his, a guy who bought his old boat. Right. And, Simon's a guy, and Simon wasn't competing. And so, you know, we were asking him, like, hey, man, can we come out fishing with you? You know, use your boat. Because that's the hardest thing is finding a boat to use. You know, he has a normal job, so he couldn't fish every day. He goes, but you know what? I have a friend that bought my old boat that might be a good setup for you. And our teammate, Ryan Buddy, actually went over first and fished with them. Then I came over for, like, the long haul. So we started fishing. We started fishing traditional style. You know, he had a live scope on the boat, but it was on the pole, and we really weren't targeting individual fish. And you know, we're fishing a river. And, we were catching fish, but not at a rate that I felt like we could be competitive at the tournament. And I told him, I said, I'm going to teach you something. I'm going to teach you. And he wanted, like he said, I want you to outfit my boat how you outfit yours, and I want to learn how you fish. And I was like, okay. And so I'll never forget it. We basically re-rigged his boat in the parking lot. We brought a bunch of electronics with us, a bunch of live scopes, graphs, all this jazz in our carry-ons. And we spent about 3-4 hours in the morning rigging this boat. And I put the trolling motor or the live scope on the trolling motor, and we went out and we made it about, I don't know, 75 yards or so from the boat launch. And I just put the trolling motor in. It was a river we were fishing in. It was a river and a lake. We were in the river that day. And he didn't even have a foot pedal. I just had the remote. And I come in, I start scanning, you know, the fishing fast the way I am or the way I do. And I see a fish set up perfectly just like a walleye. It was we were pike fishing. And I see this fish postured right. And I tell him, I said, all right, that's a big pike. Cast at it. He casts at it. Does one rip past its face, and we catch about a 38, 39 inch pike. And he looks at me, and I'll never forget it. He looks at me and goes, you just changed my life. And so him and I proceeded to like grind ourselves in the dirt for the next 3 weeks. That day it was downpour raining, like 30, 40 mile an hour winds. It was like 50, 40 degrees. I mean, it was miserable out. And we fished from sun up to sundown, and we did that every single day for 3.5 weeks. And I knew almost just about every part of that lake and that river by the time official practice even started. And, you know, I really wanted to dial in the nuances of fishing for pike, you know, like the finishing moves, the connecting moves. There's a lot of different steps to the puzzle, you know, that people don't realize when it comes to live scoping. And, you know, I really wanted to dial that in. And I also, there's a lot of strategy that goes into it, because it's not like your traditional tournament. You know, it's a every fish counts format. So we had to figure out how to not only catch big ones, but as many as we could. And also I had to find a supplementary program on how to like perch also. So, you know, there was a lot of different factors that I was working on. And, you know, a big shout out to Mark, who's actually now my MWC partner. He comes over, you know, fishes tournaments with me over here. But him and I we fish so well together. And, you know, I that was the biggest part to success was, you know, being able to put the work in and have this this starting point. So when the rest of the team got there, we were able to divide and conquer and kind of have a starting point. You know, every other time we've gone overseas, we've had 2 days to not only learn the fishery, but learn the fish. And that's just, it's impossible. You know, so just really making the commitment to do it. And, you know, when the tournament came, you know, we had a good finish. We were in contention for a medal. We finished fifth place. Me and John, I believe, finished fifth in individual pairs out of like 16 countries. And there's two pairs per country. So him and I finished very well. We actually took home the prize for the biggest fish of the entire tournament. We broke the record for biggest pike ever caught in a world championship. It was 120 centimeters, which is about 48 inches, 48 and a half, roughly.
That's a giant.
Yeah, and the funny thing with that was actually, I'm 99.99% sure, was a fish that I raised during practice in that boat. I raised it about 70 yards from where we caught it. It chased me to the boat. And now I could play the role of, you know, I was being smart, pre-fishing, and I purposely ripped my bait away from this giant fish because I didn't want to sting it, yeah. Educate it. No, it was so big, I about pissed myself when I saw it, and I ripped the bait away from it because it scared me. It was so big when I followed it. Yeah. That's how big this fish was. And, you know, come tournament time, first few days, John and I were concentrating, and Nick and Ryan were concentrating on the lake, and that was just getting pounded. And come the final day, I told John, I said, John, because John didn't pre-fish the river at all. When he got there, we focused on the lake, so he had never seen it. And I told him, I said, John, I was like, I need you to trust me right now. I was like, I think we need to go somewhere that we haven't pre-fished. I said, I know where there's a giant. We need a big day. And every day was starting to get worse and worse in the lake. And thank goodness John trusted me enough. And we went on an adventure, and we went up into this river and absolutely smashed big bite. We had like 6 or 7 fish over a meter. I think we had like 14 fish, lost just as many. And we caught that 120, and that was a huge day. And that was an awesome day for Team USA. Cause that finally gave us a respectable, good finish on the world stage. And it showed us what we need to do to be successful on the world stage. It kind of gave us the blueprint, and gave us confidence moving into the next year's championship. And also on the personal side, that's actually where I ended up meeting my now fiance. I met, believe it or not, a Scottish girl come up to me when we were out one night out there, and she walks up to me and says, "You look American," and just trying to the piss out of me. And I laughed. I'm like, "Well, what is that?" I was like, "What is that supposed to mean?" And she goes, "Oh, you actually are American." And I was like, as if this was supposed to be some like insult or something. Man, we hit it off from there. It sent my world on a absolute crazy adventure that I didn't see coming at all. I was there for work. I wasn't expecting, to meet anybody. I never thought I would settle down. But yeah, I mean, absolutely my best friend, basically a female version of me, and I told her, I was like, "I'm going to fly you out to America to come visit." And I don't think she believed me. And like, she called me out on it. Anytime someone calls me out on it, I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to prove you wrong. So her and I ended up going on a trip with some friends, a little getaway after the season, came back, and I just kept changing her flight back home. She was just going to originally be here for 10 days, took her flight, bumping back her flight. It's just absolute crazy whirlwind. We ended up getting engaged. It was one of those things where when you know. I ended up proposing. That's in its own was a hilarious story. Then we went to the Dominican on another vacation with the Doris family, and came back and found out we were expecting, which unreal, dude. Absolutely scariest, happiest moment of my life. In October, recently just found out it's a baby boy, so I got a little fishing buddy coming. But changed my outlook, and it was just mind-blowing to like where I was this time last year to where I am at right now. Just happy, I can genuinely say for the first time in as long as I can remember, I'm genuinely happy. I didn't think that was going to be a thing for me. I just kind of accepted that's just how my life is. I'm just going to be a fisherman traveling around. But now I have other things on my plate, and that's really helped me kind of buckle in and have a pretty successful season so far.
That stuff is so awesome. I'm so pumped for you. I see it in you. I see the consistency and the success, just the quality finishes that you've had this year. You fish as many high-level tournaments as anybody you know, in terms of walleye fishing here in the Midwest, you probably fish about as many, if not more than anybody. And yeah, dude, you're just consistently having quality finishes this year. So regardless of what's going on in your personal life, obviously you're not distracted in a bad way. You're motivated as ever. Your head is down. You're fishing well. And you talk about how happy you are you know, making those big steps personally. You know, like, you wouldn't be doing that if you weren't in as good a place as you've ever been. And so I love hearing that stuff from you, man. I'm super pumped for you, dude. And, you know, to circle back, like you said, you went over there. This is kind of important and cool to hear about, because all these years, anybody that follows like you and John and yeah, Ryan Buddy, who's like on my bucket list to have on this podcast, I got to figure out a way to get in touch with him. But like, you know, and Nick Schertz, I think he's been traveling with you over there. Like, if anybody that's been following the last 4 or 5 years or ever since you guys gotten doing this, this is like the first time that you gave yourself a legit fair shake. I'm just saying, like, yeah, like you finally gave yourself a chance to not only do well, but to just learn and figure out where you stack up. It's like, it's hard to learn when you go over there, you get your butt kicked, you had no pre-fish, and it's like, gosh, what am I doing here? Right. I mean, but yeah, big, big deal.
Yeah. You know, and it's, I tell people, it's not only are, you know, you only giving yourself 2 days on a new body of water, but it's, you're trying to learn a whole new species, you know, cause how a pike acts and then a walleye and shoot, how a zander acts is completely different than a walleye. They look exactly the same, but they're completely different. And, you know, it takes time to get dialed in. And that was the biggest thing. I wanted to get dialed in with catching these fish, you know, and the nuances to be able to, you know, when you get to game day, maximize your time, you know. And like this year, we're going over to Estonia another 2.5 weeks early. But I'm actually in talks of going to Latvia here in August to fish a different tournament just to get that more practice in.
Yeah, that's cool.
It just, you know, it's a zander pike perch competition, and you know, like I said, we're, you know, European fish is completely different than United States fishing, and so I want to get the, you know, want to get that, those repetitions in. And so, you know, you need that practice, and you know, just, I'm so proud of the whole team. You know, it wasn't just me. You know, it was Ryan Buddy, you know, sacrificed time and went over there for a week. Nick Schertz went over there. You know, he was about a month early, but still, I mean, just having time on that water is huge. And, you know, having these guys that buy in completely is, you know, as a team captain, it makes my life a whole lot easier, you know. And then having someone like John, who's, you know, undoubtedly the best pike fisherman in the entire wide world, having him in the boat, you know.
Are you guys able to troll for those pike?
Taylor, come on now. Don't use that word around me.
I just can't believe John doesn't try to talk you into that. You know what I mean?
Well, I know. With him being a trolling enthusiast,
yes,
you would think. But no, they have very strict rules. It's no, you can't even vertical jig in these tournaments.
Oh, really?
It's all forward casting. Cannot use any animal products. A lot of all of the musky baits work awesome for pike. I mean, I was chucking so many like diving rises, glide baits, you know, body baits, stuff like that. All musky stuff was working for this pike. You know, so we have a lot of good baits over here that work over there. But yeah, they're very strict on the rules, what you can and can't use, and how you target them. It's all, you know, it's very controlled how you fish over there. So you really have to learn the rules and the, you know, the different rules for this competition.
Summit Fishing Equipment brings technology and innovation together to improve fishing equipment design and usability. Their forward-facing sonar shuttle transducer pole combos are designed to be used year-round. With just a few accessories you'll find on the website, you can mount the shuttle and transducer pole right in your boat, making the transition from ice season to open water incredibly simple and cost-effective. Check out everything they've got at summitfishingequipment.com. Use code SUMMIT10 at checkout for 10% off all orders online. That link is in the description of this podcast. The fishing opportunities in Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region are phenomenal. You've heard us talk about it on the JMO podcast before. It's a multi-species destination. We're not just talking walleyes or perch in the wintertime. This is there's phenomenal pan fishing. There's fantastic bass fishing. There's muskies and big northern pike. Everything's there with hundreds of lakes and a bunch of communities that offer all kinds of fun events and lodging. If you want to plan your next fishing adventure, consider Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region. Head to sdglaciallakes.com for all that great information. The link is in the description to this podcast. If you have any fishing memory or a fish that you would like to commemorate with a replica, or you have questions about getting fish replicas done, reach out to Jamie Rizavi from Rizavi Taxidermy Studio in New Rockford, North Dakota. Jamie and his crew do next level work here at the JMO headquarters. We are blessed to have so many replicas made by Jamie. Reach out. You can find him on social media or online at rizavitaxidermystudio.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. Like, if you go over there in August, you know, I think we should definitely deep dive on that when you get back for that one in August. I think that would just be super cool. You know, just because anything new and interesting, anything that's different and interesting, you know, it'd be fun to kind of take see what those takeaways were. But now let's get on track here for this particular season, because, you know, I do want to cover some ground with you, you know, just because you've been doing so much fishing. It's hard to not have you on like once a month, because you fish another tournament, you have another high finish, it's a different body of water. I'd love to talk to you, but it's like, you know, it's like, golly. So, okay, yeah, where did you start? Yeah, get me going at the very beginning.
Yeah, I mean, so I started with some, you know, local fishing up on the Fox, but the first, like, real big tournament of the year was on Spring Valley, you know, the Old Faithful. I start the year every year there.
Yeah, yeah. There's always, you know, like, an MWC there that's, like, right away.
Yeah, you know, and JJ and I, we fish it every year. You know, and we did okay. You know, we finished 31st out of, like, 100 boats or so. So, I mean, it was a good start. You know, decent points. It's Spring Valley. You know, you miss the win by like a pound or two, and you'd be in 30th. So
yeah.
You know, we did okay. It was a fun start to the season, and then you know, from there we went to we fished that MWC and Loot tournament on Lake Erie. Yeah, you know, that was a thing. Like I fished, you know, I'm fishing the MWC season this year with Mark, the Irishman. He wanted to come over and learn walleye fishing, so I was like, "Oh, let's run these MWCs," because it was MWC had one of the best schedules I ever seen in my life this year. I told him, I said, "Dude, let's run it." I was like, "Erie in April is gonna be a freaking pass as long as it's not ripping." And it was, man. I mean, oh my gosh, as long as Lake Erie calms down on the wind a little bit, it's a live scoper's Disneyland. You know, we started out practice. It was pretty cold. I think water was in the 40s, low 40s or something like that. And it was windy. You know, we dealt with wind every day and mud like you normally do early Lake Erie or, you know, early April. You know, slowly throughout the week, you know, I was chasing these fish around. And the big thing was fish were going from pre-spawn. They're in the middle of the spawn. So you get on a pot of pre-spawners that were weighing 10, 11 pounds. And then all of a sudden the next day, they're like 6 pounders. And I knew with the caliber of fishermen, we needed a big bang. You were going to need 40 a day. I calculated, or I figured. And so the second to last day of practice, I'm sitting there on Kelly's Island, fishing all the island stuff, cans, you know, the traditional stuff. I was doing like 35. I had like 35 pounds on the scale that morning. And it was the first calm day we had in, like, because I was there 10 days. And it was the first calm day we basically had. And I'm trying to make up my mind. Do I go west and fish a different area that I kind of already fished through, or do I go look at new water to the east and try and find, you know, that colder water, fish that haven't spawned yet, you know, if I have fresh pond? I was like, you know what, screw it. Let's go east. Let's try and get away from the crowds, you know, and just go find something different. So, you know, I ran east about 15 miles. And I sat down in an area that I like to fish, and immediately start seeing marks. And I'm like, okay. So I dropped the live scope down, and probably within about 20, 25 minutes, we had 43 pounds on the scale. And that was 5 new fish for 43.
Yeah, like you pressed reset after having like 35.
Yeah. So and they were all big pre-spawners, and there was a lot of them. I'm like, holy cow. And I was like, okay, dude. Like, because Erie, if you find something on like Sunday and the tournament's Friday, like, that's just going to screw with your brain. Like, the first 5 days of practice, how to catch them. And just have fun, you know. And Mark—that was Mark's first walleye ever caught was a 10.5 pounder, and then his second walleye ever caught was a post spawn 31 3/4. So like, we were just wrecking bigs, you know. What's nice is we can kind of cherry pick what we want. I wouldn't even cast the 4 or 5 pounders. There's a million of them, but I would just, you know, cherry pick the big ones out. And so when we found him on that Wednesday, I was like, okay, this is close enough to the tournament. I think we found something. And I told Mark, I don't make this proclamation a lot just because I'm very superstitious and I know how tournaments work. But I told him, I said, dude, we just found a winning fish. I don't know if they're going to cooperate, but we just found the winning fish. You know, we didn't fish Thursday because it was rough. And I just did a little, launched the boat, went out and high speed graph the area, make sure they're still there. And then I kind of expanded on it a little bit and figured out where these fish, because they would slide every day. And I was figuring out which way they were sliding and kind of putting them to bed. And day one of the tournament comes and it is ripping, like just ripping out of the north, northeast. And I was hoping they were going to call it blow day. They didn't for some reason. They just hate us apparently. We went out, and the whole time, like, I'm just complaining the whole time, like, because it was miserable. I mean, it was, like, legit sixes and sevens where I was. You know, a lot of guys close to the islands. It was a little more protective, but still gnarly. And to be honest, like I said, I told the tournament director this, both of them. I was like, it sucked, but it was fishable. So I get why you sent us. As a line scoper, I still, like, cursed your name 1,000 times today for – because Sunday was going to be flat call, too. I was like, oh, my gosh, you guys suck. Because if it was flat calm, every day it was calm, I was doing 40 to 45 a day. When it was rough, it was, you know, harder, obviously, to do anything. Well, we were grinding, pick off a couple fish here or there. I was missing a lot of fish because, you know, you pull it out of their mouth when you go up a 7-foot wave. It was just, we were picking away at them, and there was always an afternoon bite. And I was just trying to keep myself mentally in it until the afternoon hit. And finally, you know, afternoon comes around. About noon. Noon was like the dinner bell or the lunch bell. And all of a sudden, we called up to, like, I think we came in with like 35-something pounds. And I was pissed, to be honest with you. Like, I was almost embarrassed to come in with that bag based off of what my practice was and, you know, the bites I had. I mean, I was furious with myself. I was like, I just lost this. This is stupid. And we were about 3 pounds out of the lead. I think it was like 38 was leading after day one. And we were in like, I don't know, we were like fifth after day one.
Yeah, you were top 10 for sure, I think, right?
Yeah, I think we were like fifth or something. And, you know, I was like, you know, I was mad because I said when the schedule came out, I said, this is the one I'm going to win if I'm going to win one this year. And I needed to take care of business. Because this, I mean, with it being a split tournament, there was a lot of contingency money, tournament money on the line, like, I'm like, this is, I need, you know, this is an important one, right? Well, anyways, we go out day two, and the fish, like, I put the trolling motor down, and the fish were not there like they were. And I was like, oh no. And it was still rough in the morning. It took a while to calm down. And I was getting frustrated, and I was kind of moving. I made a few moves, and I found a little micropod that had big fish in it. It was like the last remaining few fish. I was super worried that the fish were going to start dumping because it was the last full moon that night after day one. And that's usually when, you know, the last of the fish would dump. And I'm like, please just hold on for one more day. And, you know, I started to pick away a couple of decent ones, got up to like 30 pounds. And, you know, we didn't really have much for weight until noon. And I kept telling myself, like, and we had a long day. Luckily, we were last flight. And I'm like, okay, just we need get to that bite window. And, you know, it started to get to about 11, and I was making, like, I was fighting the thoughts of, do I leave? Do I run, you know, another 10 miles to the east to the next spot, you know, and start scrambling? And I'm like, I was just about to go. And all of a sudden, right as I was about to pick up, I see JJ coming from the east. from where I was just going to go, and he sat down, and like, he was far enough away, like, so I had no idea what he had, but I knew if he was, he looked like he was scrambling, and where he was coming from was where I was going to go. So I told myself, I'm like, okay, you just stay put. Clearly something happened that way. I don't know what, but like, that's my sign. That's my sign from God, just to, you know, stay put and grind it out. And thank God I did, because all of a sudden it was like 12:30. It was like, bang, 9 pounder, boom, 8 pounder, boom, 8.5. And we were sitting at, what were we at? We were like 35 or 36 pounds. We had like a 4 pounder in our box that we had to cull out. And I made this cast, and I was venting to Mark. Man, I got to give Mark so much credit, because he handles my spin out so like awesomely. You know, he's just very like even deal, but he also like matches my energy, because he's just as competitive as me. And you know, and like I said, he was a Premier League soccer player for 10 years. So he's got a lot of like high end competition experience.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And he told me, he's like, he goes, man, he goes, I'll tell you what I always told my players when I played. He goes, at the end of the day, all you can do is your absolute best. If you leave it all out there, that's all you can do. And, you know, he gave me a few other, you know, we had a really good heart-to-heart. And I was like, kind of snapped me out. I'm like, okay, let's just grind it out and see what happens. And because there was a lot of fish that would come up and deny me. I'm like, we're on Lake Erie. You should not be denying a jigging crawler ever. I see this fish, and it's a big mark. And I told him, I said, man, just once, I want to catch that, like, crazy lucky fish that, like, wins the tournament. Like, that's never me. And I see this fish over my back right shoulder. And it's me and John always laugh about it. It's the kiss of death fish for a live scoper. Like, you can never hit that cast. No matter how much you try, the off to the right, you know, don't even take the cast, because it's never going to work, right? Well, I did this, like, Hail Mary, no look, over my right shoulder, backflip cast, trying to land on it. And I dart it. And it, like, I see my jig falling, like, perfectly in line with this fish. And I'm like, holy, I'm like, oh, my God, it's going right to it. Well, then all of a sudden my line gets caught in my stern light cap, because I had the light, the stern light in the morning. So I had that cap open. Well, my line gets caught in that cap. And so I run back there. I'm trying to untangle it. Then it wraps around the rod holder. And I'm cussing. I'm like, God dang it. I'm like, you stupid idiot. Why would you take that cast? You had an opportunity to have a fish and you messed it up. You know, that's not exactly what I'm saying, but like, that's a PG version.
Yeah.
I'm slapping myself. Like, you idiot. I'm like, you just ruined it. And I untangle it. And I grab the rod and I lift up and the fish is there. And I'm like, oh my God. And I jacked that one set. And I'm like, oh my God, Mark, I got her. I was like, I'm pretty sure I got her. Cause I didn't see it eat, didn't see it turn. Like, it just, this was all unprompted, and we're fighting it. It comes up, it's like a 9.5 pounder. And that was our final finish. And I'm like, dude, what just happened? Like, that did not just go down like that. And we're hugging, you know, and I'm like, we come in, and I purposely wait, cause we were last flight. And I purposely like waited to be the last one to weigh in. Cause I hate weighing in like early and watching people pass me, you know. And I didn't think we had enough, you know, because there was a lot of guys that had bigger bags, and that's why I waited till the end, because I'm such a nervous Nelly. And you know, Alex Reslock was the one that was leading, and we're standing in line, and they said what he had, and I was like, I did the math in my head, and I was like, oh my God, it's gonna be like right there. And I was like, holy cow, we actually have a really good chance to win this. And luckily, my scale was like almost a pound short from what we really had.
Oh, really?
So we had 37 something. It was like 38 something, 38 and change. Yeah. So we ended up winning, and that was awesome. You know what I mean? And especially after like last year NWT, you know, I that was when I started to unlock the Lake Erie jigging thing, and I still kick myself for it. Like the one John won, I had the bites to do it. I just had the wrong equipment. I kept straightening hooks and all this. And, you know, I basically went into the workshop and built my own jigs, you know, dialed in exactly from the line to the reel, to the rod, to the you know, exact bait that I needed on how to not lose these fish. And, you know, we went into that NTC and you know, kind of perfected it from there and took third in that. So, you know, to kind of, that was my redemption, you know, come back to the same place where I cost myself a win on the NWT or, top five, to redeem myself like that was awesome. You know, a great way to start the season.
So the only thing I'll ask you about the fishing is like, and I've never actually fished over on Lake Erie. So when people describe it or when I see videos or whatever, some of it's kind of, there's still like some elements that I feel like are a little bit vague and like, you know, just because I haven't been there, you know, so it's kind of on me. But I'll still ask the question, like when you talk about, when you're pre-fishing, when you found that area and you talk about how, okay, there's a bunch of these fish here. There's a, you know, the winning bag of a 2-day tournament is living in this area. I'm curious what that looks like from a fishing standpoint. Like how many, like how far apart are these big marks? Like how many of them are you think, do you think you're talking about?
Yeah. You know, Lake Erie is unique because there's so many factors that go into picking a tournament spot for out there. Because there's so many fish in Lake Erie, right?
Yeah.
You go anywhere and you can pretty much pull 35 pounds just about anywhere in Lake Erie. You know, not in every place, but for the most part, you can do it. But, like, the main things I look for, especially in that tournament, was, you know, A, I was looking for water clarity. I was looking for size of the school. Because for me on Lake Erie, I want to find a super school of fish. You know, because a lot of, like, these big schools will be miles wide and miles long, right? It's not like you see a pod with 10 fish in it, and you're like, I'm going to catch those exact 10 fish. You have to get into a high traffic area where these fish are coming through. And this was a spot that it was on the migrational path of Lake Erie. And once you learn how these fish migrate and when they migrate, why they migrate, you know, like the inner workings of it, you start to get a better idea of, you know, how you can kind of intercept these fish as they're coming, right? And that where I was, I had a very good feeling that it would reload if those fish were moving, right? You know, and the size of the school, there was a lot of fish. You know, there's fish everywhere, but you might go 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 minutes without casting because you don't see one of those real good marks. But you just want to, like, for me, I like to play the numbers game on Erie. You sort through 100 fish, there'll be at least, you know, 3, 4, or 5 good fish, right? And, you know, a lot of it, you got to catch them in practice, you know, see the size. But, you know, pre-spawn, post-spawn, I could tell when they were pre's and post just by how they were swimming, how they were moving. There was a lot of good fish that I didn't cast at. I was like, no, it's a post-spawn. And Mark didn't believe me. And I was like, okay, here. I said, that's probably about a 28-inch 6-pounder, and I cast at it. Well, it was 28 inches, 6 pounds. And so just learning what these fish are doing and what they're like and knowing what to cast at is huge. So like I said, I like to play the numbers game. And the other thing on Lake Erie is where the crowds are, right? Because there's a lot of, you know, not everyone on Lake Erie is there to fish the tournament you're fishing. It's one of the highest traffic pleasure, you know, or everyday fishermen by the water. And it's one way to find out where the schools are, but also on the other hand, like, those are heavily pressured fish. So I try and get as far away from the crowd as I possibly can and find, you know, areas that, you know, aren't as pressured. And that's what I did. I think, you know, during the entire tournament, day one, I didn't see another boat. Day two, I had a couple boats, tournament boats follow me. And they were trying to live scope, but they had it on a pole, so I wasn't at all worried. And they were there for a little bit and left. But, you know, it's like I said, it's so many factors that play into it for me. But it's when the right conditions are there, you know it. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, holy cow, there's a lot of fish. Yep, there's good ones mixed in here. Yes, they'll bite. Yes, they're, you know, the water clarity is right because, you know, there was days where some of the spots I was fishing in practice that were on fire were chocolate milk by game day. So, you know, you have to, you know, play the water clarity, water temperature game. The most important part, honestly, is just finding the right water because there's so many fish in that lake. You know, you can go just about any area and find the fish. The nice thing about Lake Erie is they're very bitey. You know, John loves to throw his plastics and all that. I'm not about that plastic life. I feel like a jig and a crawler is way more effective, especially out there. Just about every fish will eat a jig and a crawler. So you take that factor out of, you know, having to figure out what they want to eat. Well, once you have that figured out, it just becomes a speed game. You know, I'd cast at a fish, it would either eat or it wouldn't. And if it like denied me, I might take one more cast at it. If I didn't get a great cast, you know, I cast at it, it would either eat or it wouldn't. Sometimes if they ate it, missed it, I could cast back at them, catch them. But if they denied me, all right, whatever, I don't need you. I'll go to the next nine pounder. Because there's so many big fish in that lake, is you don't, unless it's like a mega giant 12 pounder or whatever, that you can obviously tell. It's just, okay, you don't want to eat, the next one will want to eat. So you just keep going, going, going until you get to, you know, eventually you'll find five fish that want to eat in a day.
Is the best cast always just trying to land it on their head?
I would say 90% of the time. There are, you know, a few bodies of water, like Green Bay is a good example, especially when I'm casting like a death jig or a jig and a crawler or something like that. I'll cast it past them because those, you know, water's so clear, those fish are spooky. I'll cast past them, reel it back to the boat, and activate them that way. But 90% of the time, you know, the initial drop is what causes activation on these fish. And that's where, you know, I want to get it, you know, right in between their eyes. You know, it doesn't matter if I landed behind them, to the side of them. If I don't see that bait falling perfectly in line, you know, a lot of times I will cast a little past them, you know, just to drop it down to them and bring it back to them, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like I'll overcast because it's easier to adjust than, like, if you undercast, you're screwed. You got to reel under the cast. So I'll cast past them. As long as I'm perfectly in line with them, I'll keep it above them, and then I want it to drop down to their face, and it, like, that, like, triggers, like, the predator response in them, to where they're like, oh my gosh, that's food. I got to, you know, investigate, eat, whatever. And that'll start, you know, you activated them, right? Now the hard part is knowing where it changes for every body of water is the finishing move. The closing move is different based off of time of day, their mood, the bait you're throwing, you know, yada, yada, yada. It's different everywhere you go. And that's kind of what I spend a lot of practice doing, is playing with the different cadences. And you know, a lot of it, like, you know, yeah, people see me cast at a fish and, you know, catch it, whatever, but they don't know what I'm doing with the bait. And like, there's certain things, that real little things that I'll do, to kind of get that fish to activate, especially when it's a, you know, it's a tough bite. When they want to eat, they turn and annihilate it, but not every fish, unfortunately, does that. I wish they did, but not very often. It's kind of similar. So I just got back from Lake Oahe too, right? Where the King of Missouri won the UC. I took a measly fifth place behind him. but it was crazy out there. Like how much it changes based off of the type of fish you're fishing for, right? Like the finishing move or the activation move for the overs was completely different than for the unders. You know, like the unders, you know, we're fishing shallow. You know, I casted these fish and, you know, you had to drop it and drop it down to bottom. And it was just like little twitches on bottom, you know, and not snapping, not lifted up on bottom, just basically drag it on bottom and just do like little tiny pops. And they'd either smoke it or they, you know, pick it up off bottom. You know, and those big ones, you know, out in the deeper water, a lot of it was, you know, drop on them. And if you dropped it, like, if once they, cause every, it was, oh my God, it was the most frustrating thing, but like every fish activated, but it was like 1 in 100 would actually eat on the big ones.
Yeah.
But if they were chasing it and you tried to do that with the big fish, they chase it, not a single one ever ate it. You had to take it up away from, even with jig wraps, man, like up until later in the week, they started liking the more aggressive stuff. But like earlier in the week, it was like I was ice fishing. I was just taking it away from, taking away from, turn, chasing up, chasing up, chasing up. And eventually they, you know, if they ate it, that's when they'd eat it. And you know, like I was throwing the, plastics a lot. That's how I caught most of my big fish. And like, that's how they shad eaters. They're eating it like shad, you know, and that's where a lot of those finishing moves, if you understand what the body of water's main forage is, then it'll help you understand what you need to do for those fish. Like Green Bay, they're goby eaters. So a lot of it, they're eating off bottom, you know, they'll chase it for a while, they pan it on bottom, stuff like that. Once you get out in the Dakotas, you know, I found that's where they more eat facing up because they're shad eaters. They're used to chasing, you know, chasing bait. And so that's kind of like where it plays into is just you know, different types. And if you get like those shallow fish, a lot of times, you know, they're eating minnows, but they're also eating like crayfish and little fish that are down on rocks and stuff like that. That's why they're eating it off bottom. Where, you know, when you get all the suspended stuff, that's when you got to kind of work it, take it away from them and work on like an upswing.
That is a crazy deal. Those suspended fish on like on Oahu, you know, and you catch suspended fish, you know, on the Great Lakes and things like that. Do you feel like there's something maybe a little bit different or special about Oahu? Like, you know, you talk about, you know, it can be frustrating, definitely. Like in any fishery on any given day can be frustrating for you. But do you feel like figuring out that finishing move is like a super detailed deal on Oahu? Like I'm just sort of curious about a more in-depth explanation there, because I find that fascinating as well. I mean, there a lot of those fish are suspended, you know, I mean, you're in 70, 80 feet of water or whatever, and they're, you know, 20 feet down or 30 feet down or whatever. I mean, there's so much. It's not a situation where you can just let them track you to the bottom.
No. Yeah. And Oahu is like one of the most fun but frustrating places I've ever been to in my life. And it'll make you pull your hair out, because, I mean, my first cast, or I shouldn't say first cast, my first fish on Oahu this year was a 12.6. And I drop a jig wrap on it, you know, all faithful. I snap it once, inhales it, right? And I'm like, okay, like, I'm dialed, like, let's go. This is about to be an absolute smash fest. Well, about 500 fish later, yeah. Chasing my bait and not eating, I'm sitting there like, what in the actual heck is going on? Like, what? Why are we doing this? You know, and you know, a lot of it again is, you know, there's so many big fish. Is you have to play the numbers game. And for me, it was like I spent like 3 days trying to catch, you know, a big one a day. And you know, it was crazy because the bite windows were insane. Like, I became a Dewey Helm at about 6 p.m. every single night. Like, before that, I was just a mere mortal on that lake. Like, I could not get bit on an over. 6 p.m. to dark, like, every fish just committed suicide, right?
Non-tournament hours.
Oh, no, not even close. And, it was fun because you'd rack up giant fish and we're putting up good bags every day. You know, because, like, the unders we had so dialed. Like, we caught so many big unders and they were coming so easy in practice. Like, oh, my gosh. I'm like, okay, I just need to make sure and get these big ones. You know, these unders they're jumping in the boat, right? And, you know, and I sort of told guys, I'm like, you know, a couple of my buddies that were fishing, I'm like, dude, I'm not confident I can catch two a day. And the other problem with Oahu is those fish are moving. They're migrating right now. So, like, spot where they were loaded one day, they're gone the next, you know. And so the last day of practice, I was like, okay, I'm going to, you know, like I said, the number one bait for us that week was plastics. And I was just trying to figure out these finishing moves and how to get these fish to eat. And I knew guys were catching on jig wraps. I couldn't get them, so I was just sticking to my, you know, my plastic. And, you know, these fish would come up, chase, and eventually all of a sudden you drop it on one and they turn it. Same thing, they eat it. And so the last day of practice, I was like, okay, I need to find some more areas, but, you know, I need to try and catch one. Well, I finally got one to eat, and I set the hook on it, and I told Mark, I was like, this one's different. Like, we're in 40 feet of water and I couldn't move it. And normally I don't play fish. Like, I, you know, 30 inches, I water ski almost half the time. I don't like giving fish time to fight. And this fish, I mean, it was a deadlock with them halfway up the surface. And it takes a lot for my knees to start like shaking when I'm fighting a fish. And this fish came up, it was the biggest walleye I've ever seen in my life. And we didn't have, I took the net out of the boat. I always take the net out of the boat in practice. I don't net fish and it just gets in the way. And this thing comes up. I'm like, oh my God, that's my PB. And so I reach down, I tail grab it and I get in the boat. I'm just shaking. Like, I black out. I put it on the scale. It's a 14-1. by far my PB. And I take a couple pictures and then we do a release video. I blacked out so much I didn't even think to measure it.
Like, measure it? Yeah.
I had no idea how long my PB is. No, and that's the first thing everyone asks. How long was it? But, you know, and that was kind of gave me a little bit of confidence. Like, okay, like, I can catch them during daytime. It's just I'm going to have to fish fast and aggressive and do this specific cadence, and eventually two will eat. And, you know, come tournament time, I go back to that spot where I caught that 14 pounder, and there wasn't a single fish to be found in that spot. And so it was just, I mean, me and Mark were fishing so fast. I had that trolling motor on 10. I'm scanning. The fish were either there or they weren't. And then I was just popping areas. And I was, there was a lot of areas that I didn't even pre-fish that I just rolled in, looked good, you know. And the underbite blew up on us, which blew my mind. I was like, we still caught really good unders, but it was like we caught three. You know what I mean? Like where we would roll in. And like last day of practice, after I caught that 14, I went to a whole new under spot. And we took five casts, and I had a 3.3 19-incher, a 3.1, and, like, a 2.9. And I'm like, I wanted none of you today. Yeah. But, like, yeah, that's cool, you know. And every spot we went to was, like, 2 3/4 of three-pounders were coming fast. And, you know, come tournament time, like, the bite died for us. And it was a grind. We had the cameraman on day one. I caught, like, a 6-pounder. I had to kiss a death because you can't cull in South Dakota. And I caught these like 4-pounders and I threw back. Mark caught like a 4-pounder that we threw back. Finally, I catch like a 6 3/4. And I'm like, it's like 9:30. We don't have a fish. I'm like, all right, I got to box this. And I knew Dewey would make fun of me because he's like, nothing under 8. You know, we're talking all week. And Dewey's like, I love Dewey. He's one of the best sandbaggers in the world. Like, absolutely. Like, he tried telling me it's tough. I'm like, I know it's tough, but I also know it's you. Like, don't, like, I'm not, no.
Oh yeah, there's a matter of perspective there. It's like he's genuinely humble and he's honest. That's like, so it comes off like super sandbaggy,
yeah.
but it's a matter of perspective. Cause like, you know, a tough bite for him, like just doesn't compare when he's on Oahu or like when he's on his own home body of water. It's almost like, you know, just don't even say it, Dewey. Don't even tell me that.
Well, and you know, like I respect Dewey so much. Like I don't even ask him. Cause like I tried pimping him for info. When we were at the NWT, when we were out celebrating JJ's win, I thought if we got enough liquor in him, you know, he'd start to open up, and he wouldn't tell me nothing. And so, you know, him and I kind of like, we talk, you know, roughly throughout the week, be like, he's like, what's your minimum? And I told him, I was like, dude, I have no idea. And he goes, yeah, man, I haven't caught one over 8 in like days. I'm like, yeah, I know you because you're not casting at him. And he just smiles and laughs. And I go, Dewey, I know you. I was like, I know you got a secret boat you're going to fish out of, blah, 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 blah. Well, sure enough, they fish out of Tyson's boat. And I'm like, but after day one, I told Dewey, I said, Dewey, if you don't weigh 30 pounds tomorrow, don't even weigh in. I was like, I was like, I'm kind of disappointed you only weighed 23 today. I'm like, I expect 30 out of you. And when he came in with that 27 pounds, I came up to him, I said, I thought I told you nothing under 30 today, you know? But yeah, so anyways, I knew he was going to scold me for keeping a 6-pounder, but we were also playing the points game. And, you know, because we were there for team of the year, that's the big thing we're chasing. And so,
yeah, I mean, there's, you know, that's a very good point. I'm really glad you brought it up, and I don't want to just breeze over it that, you know, fishing to win a tournament and then also protecting yourself to potentially win an angler of the year. I mean, that's a huge deal, and that there's a payout there too. So it's like, you know, like it's just, I'm glad you mentioned that, and I just didn't want to breeze over that. So that's why, yeah. I kind of interrupted you there, but keep going.
And that's, you know, that's one thing like I pride myself on that in my career is like, I know, like, I don't have as many wins as Dewey or John, but my check cashing is like, I'm very steady, and that's something I'm very proud of. Like, I know when to try and hit a home run, and I know when to, you know, I might not be a home run hitter, but I'm going to hit a bunch of singles and doubles. You know what I mean? And that's kind of where my mind went to. Like, you know what? It might not be my day. You know what I mean? I got to make sure and get points, you know? And so we kept the 6. Then we went under fishing, caught 1 good under, 2 like small ones or something. And I'm like, okay, like, this isn't great, but we need to go. So we ran to another spot that I caught fish in the evening. That I knew that there were some good ones in. And so we you know, slide in there and catch like a 2.4 under in some trees, right? And I'm like, okay, cool. And then I roll up to the tree and I see this big walleye sit on the tree. Mind you, I hadn't caught a walleye on a tree all week. And I see this big fish and I'm like, I watch these guys around me catch fish on jigging wraps. And I'm like, it's bugging me. guys are out fishing me to chicken wraps because that was my deal. Like when I first started live scoping, that was all I threw was J wraps. And I'm like, man, I'm getting beat at my own game here. So I picked it up. And like I said, all week, all I could get them to do was chase it up. And like if I snapped it too aggressively, they scattered, right? So I'm like, man, I got to do something different. So I dropped it on this fish. I got, you know, right above them. And I did a finishing move that I kind of developed when I was fishing Fort Pack. And it's like a semi-aggressive one. And there, like, there's a little few like minor details on it. But anyways, I did that. And it was completely different than what I had been doing. And I did it. And the fish just, I mean, it was one, you know, revolution. And just, boom, I get absolutely knocks the rod on my head. And I set the hook. I'm like, oh, my God, this is it, you know. And we get it in. It's a 9.5-pounder. And I'm like, oh, my God, that just saved our season. You know, that one.
Yeah, that's a, you know, and how late in the day was it?
It was 2:15. Like, this was, like, bottom of the ninth, 2 outs type deal.
Yeah, like the last 30 minutes of fishing or something.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, my God, dude, we got our 2 overs. Like, that, they're not great overs, but they're good overs, you know. And so, I told Mark, I'm like, let's roll up to this spot. There's some shallow rocks. I'm like, bet you there's walleyes up on that. And we roll up on that, and I catch we have one slot open, and I catch a 2.6. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. Like, hell yeah, dude. Like, we just called up, like, it was, like, 22 pounds or whatever. And it wasn't a great bag, but it was, like, I knew it was going to keep us, you know, close. And, yeah, we were, like, 10th place or something, that ninth or 10th after day one. And I'm like, okay. Like, we kept ourselves alive. And so we go out day two, and we start where we ended. And the thing with the Missouri River, they do not, and the whole system from all the way from Sakakawea, Fort Pack, all the way down to McConaughey, they do not like thunderstorms. I don't know why. I mean, no body of water really likes thunderstorms, but reservoir fish hate them. Like, and it shuts them off completely. And we got a little bit of a, like, I woke up in the middle of the night and there was a random pop-up thunderstorm that wasn't predicted. And I'm like, oh, man, really? And Mark was asking me, he's like, is that going to help or hurt it? I said, well, it's either going to fire them off or it's more than likely going to shut them completely off. Sure enough, shuts them off. And I'm getting denied by a bunch of fish. I start, we go under fishing a lot earlier. I'm like, okay, we need to get our unders, you know, and get out of there. Well, we catch two good unders. It took us hours to do, but we caught two good unders. Go a little bit further, and I catch one that, like, a beautiful 2.10 something or 2.11 under. And I'm like, okay, cool. So then we start fishing super fast, and the bite's absolutely horrible. I mean, I'm getting denied by every fish. They're scared. They're not even chasing like they were on day one. Because every fish I cast at would activate on day one. And day two, it was like 1 out of 15 would activate. And then, like, you know, the odds weren't great. So that was like this little cup, and I could get them to activate. I want to say it was like 1 o'clock. And we had 4 fish, and I'm like, we're floundering. I get one to eat, and it's like a 20 3/4, but it weighs like 4 3/4 pounds. Like, just an absolute, I mean, the fish was built like me. Like, just short, round, and sassy, you know what I mean? I was like, dude, I hate that I have to do this, but I boxed it. I'm like, we need every, at that point, I was like scratching and clawing for every point I could get, you know? And
yeah.
So we box it, and I'm chasing this one fish, and then I cast at this fish. It was like 12-pound class fish. I got it to eat my plastic, and I ripped the tail out of his mouth. It just nipped the back, and I'm like, oh my God, like, I finally get one to, like, eat, and I miss it. Like, I could have cried. And so then I'm trying to cast at this fish. He's just doing, like, these evasive maneuvers on bottom, and I could not get my plastic down to him. Couldn't get a jig down to him, and I'm getting so frustrated with that. I mean, I followed this fish probably about 15 minutes. So I'm like, all right, I'm picking up the jig wrap. I'm going to try and get a reaction. And I cast at him like 3 times. I couldn't get in front of him, Finally, I let him perfectly, and we were straight vertical. I dropped down past his face, and I do one, like, snap, like, good pop, and he just, boom, inhales it. And, like, it was so, like, crazy because I didn't even see him move on live scope. Like, it was just he was swimming, and it dropped in his face, and he just, like, inhaled it and didn't even move for it. Like, I just dropped that hamburger right in his mouth just perfectly. And I set the hook, and it ended up being like an 11, I think it went 11-6 or something.
Japers.
And again, this fish was at 220 and we were doing it 3. And I'm like, and we were going to leave at, I think it was like 3:30 or 2:30. I was going to leave or something like that. And buzzer beater gave us more weight than we had on. Somehow with really 1.5 overs, we had more weight on day 2 than we did on day 1. And saved our season. You know what I mean? That wasn't the win, but a 5th place finish, gave us points. And now we're leading team of the year by right now 100 points. I mean, that's going to change after the next one. But to have a 100-point lead, I'll take that as a win any day of the week.
Yeah. Yeah, but then keeping your head down and getting those catches late in the day, man, that's what separates you, man. Like that, I just love hearing that. And I don't want to skip over that because, like, yeah, you're spinning out or you have a million reasons to spin out or to just fold up. The last hour of fishing time, when you get those super meaningful catches it's really just a result of working hard. Yeah, dude, like you just worked hard right till the end, man. I think that there's a great message in that. And you've had, you're fishing, I think you were telling me before this, like you're fishing basically 3 different circuits, right? You kind of got the local thing happening back home and you're fishing the MWCs and the NWT naturally that we talk about. And again, we were just chatting, like we're 2 stops in, we're about halfway through the regular season of the NWT and you're way into the top 10 of AOI. You're leading by 100 points, team of the year in the MWC. And then I think I've been following you close enough on socials to know that you've either won one or top 5 multiple of your local circuit. So you're like, man, dude, you're fishing strong.
Yeah, so I'm heading out to back to South Dakota for the 3rd time this year. Super fun drive. I'm heading out to Francis Case down at Pigstown. We got the national team championship out here this week or next week. I'm heading out a little early to get some pre-fishing in. It's a big tournament. It's 250 to 300 boat field. It's a grassroots tournament. You qualify through the club level. Me and my partner, we won team of the year in our club series last year. So we got a bid there last year. Looking forward to it, man. I love the Missouri River. I really do. I think of all the tournaments I've fished out here, like I was doing the math, it's only like, I want to say twice I haven't cashed a check on the Missouri River. Every other time, like it's been very good to me. And I really like how it fishes. You know, the Missouri River fishes similar but different on every pool. Has its similarities, but it also has its nuances on each body of water. So it's fun to kind of dial that in each place I go and figure that out as I go along.
It's your 3rd trip to South Dakota this year, but it's the 3rd different reservoir. It's kind of fun to hear. Here you on the grind making the drive because those are away games for you.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like I really, I enjoy going places like this. As much as I love, like I'm just coming from a tournament on Lake Winnebago where I can sleep in my own bed. And that's nice. But places like this make me a better fisherman, and that's why I had so much fun at Oahe. But the entire time I was at Oahe, I'm like, I'm locked in. I'm already thinking ahead to this term. Like, man, I'm glad I'm getting the repetitions in for fishing these Dakota fish. That'll do me dividends, for when I go to Francis Case. And I spent the last 2 weeks just dialing in tackle. And, I wasn't even rigging tackle for the Winnebago tournament. Like, I knew what I was going to do, where I was going to do, why, it's home water. But, like, my mind's just been spinning for the last 2-3 weeks, getting as much stuff as I can ready for this. And, this one's going to be redemption for me. I mean, last time we were here, like I finished 11th on the NWT, Dewey won it. But it's always the one that got away. I dumped about a 7-8 pounder, which on this body water is a unicorn, on day 1 boat side. And, I had like 12.5 pounds and, you add bare minimum, it was a 7. You had 5 pounds of my weight. I would have been right there with Dewey leading day 1.
Yeah, I think we saw that on Tour Level Gold too, right? That was first season of Tour Level Gold.
Yeah, yeah. You didn't see the actual fish catch. I purposely didn't save the footage because you know, it was not great. there was a lot of choice words, but you know, it for me, like ever since then, all I could think about was, man, I cannot wait to go back there. You know, because I'm gonna get my get back. You know, and you know, and we're in the same time frame as we were last time. You know, and so I'm hoping the bite will be similar. It was very, very fun. Oh, right up my wheelhouse. You know, and the you know, the night, honest to God, the thing I enjoy about the Dakotas, like Lake Oahe, you know, and Sharp and here is, you know, everywhere else I go in the country, the only thing I throw anymore is a jig and a nightcrawler. That's all I throw. That's all you need, that's all I throw. Well, the Dakota fish, they're a little more picky. They'll eat it, but it's not, you can't catch every fish on it. So it makes, you know, I enjoy it because it makes me pull out different baits, different, you know, and you got to have multiple different programs kind of dialed in to catch these fish. So it kind of keeps my mind sharp, you know, you kind of get that repetitive, just throw a jig in a crawler, you get a little lazy over time. You know, coming to a place like here where it's, you know, plastics, you know, glide baits, you know, reaction baits, stuff like that, it's kind of, you know, keeps your mind sharp.
Heck yeah, dude. All right, man. Well, we've covered a lot of ground, dude. I love the updates. I love the stories, you know, and just kind of getting caught up with you know, just kind of like a little bit of a deep dive. I know, I feel like I'm excited to go way deeper into this, like, international fishing, because I think that, you know, that's a story that I can't just get anywhere. So I'm stoked that you've got plans in August to go over and fish a tournament. I definitely want to get on your schedule around that time when you get back to do like more of a deep dive on the experiences that you've had over there, like sort of the whole picture. But also too, like your season. Yeah, dude, I just love it. You know, winning on that co-op tournament early in the year on Erie, like, dude, that was just like a star-studded field. You know, like there was, yeah, just a lot going on there. And for you to put that one together is unbelievable. I love the story there. Leading the team of the year in the MWC at this point is awesome. And now you're going to go fish an NTC. You just came from the Merck National, and neither of those are like your circuits. You know, you're fishing like three different leagues, and then you're fishing these giant tournaments in between. So busy guy, dude. You're a busy guy.
Yeah, no rest for the wicked, you know. And you know, and before, you know, before we sign off, the one thing I want to add, you know, is, you know, my big thing, right? The thing I'm proudest of this whole journey, right? It's just where I was at this time last year, right? And like the thing that really warms my heart and makes me really happy is the amount of people that come up to me and, you know, show that support, but also the people that come up to me in private and say, you know, just how much me speaking out has meant to them and how much they can relate to that. And, you know, I know there's a ton of people that are listening to this that, you know, might be where I was at last year, man. Like, and, you know, it took a lot for me to pull myself out. I really didn't know what I was holding on for, to be honest with you. Like, I knew there was something in my future, but I didn't know what. And when you don't know what's on your horizon, you don't know exactly what's there to hold on to. It's hard to keep grinding. But you know, the biggest thing I urge is anybody that's listening that was in a place where I was last year, you know, in a darker spot, is just keep grinding. You know, there's beautiful times ahead. You know, at the end of the day, man, I love fishing. I love having good finishes. That's not the most important thing in the world to me. You know, now I have my purpose. Now I have, you know, something to, you know, keep fighting for. You know, now the, you know, all the social media trolls, the peers that dislike me, that trying to ruin my life behind the scenes, they don't bother me anymore, because as long as I feel secure about myself and, you know, I put that work in, and if I can survive what I went through the last 2 years, you know, I can deal with anything. You know, anybody that's listening, just keep grinding, and, you know, beautiful days are ahead for sure.
I love it, man. And how lit was it when JJ won?
Oh boy. Yeah. No, that was incredible. I mean, it was, I was one of the top five, one of the best parties I've ever been to.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he said it was pretty lit. He said he'll let the other boys talk about it. He didn't even he's like, that's like the night that shall never be talked about